Hello there. Welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and Tim Kearns. Hopefully, will be along here pretty soon. And this is our show that it's our program, a little program about that big, that's been going on for a long, long time now. We're going to talk some high school sports, some local sports tonight. Also talk in with our usual guest sports writers, Gary Larrabee and Mike Grenier. Gary has a lot of golf still to talk about here, as well as other things. And, of course, Mike, we usually talk hockey. We usually talk basketball with Mike, but who knows? It could be football. It could be whatever. But I think we'll be getting into basketball, where the Celtics are in the middle of training camp as we speak. Lots and lots of high school stuff going on right now. This is it's great to see. I tell you what, at the games, the football games I've been to, the attendance has been spectacular. Friday night, I was in Peabody for the Marblehead at Peabody game, and the stands were absolutely jam-packed. Well, the stand is one side, as in most parks now, most fields. And the same thing week before that in Danvers. It was absolutely full of Reading and Danvers fans on the one side where the bleachers are. Tremendous attendance. The first game, the game we did in Gloucester, which was the first game of the season, it was okay. It was fairly well attended. But all the other games I've been to so far, lots and lots of people showed up. So I think it's pretty obvious that people are wanting to be out and getting outdoors. And the weather has been okay on Friday nights. It was terrific this past Friday night when Peabody and Marblehead played, or at least when all the schools played on Friday night. And it was fun to watch. Marblehead just blasted out on top there to begin with in that first quarter. I think they built a 27-0 lead before Peabody finally got it going. And Peabody, through the middle part of the game, in my opinion, outplayed Marblehead, but they made a couple of just key mistakes at key places, and Marblehead with the big lead didn't have to worry too much. They got one more touchdown and held Peabody in that one. So lots of fun. Some really exciting games over the weekend. I'm trying to get a hold of some of the coaches involved in them, St. Mary's and Bishop Fenwick, in an overtime game. We're going to talk with Gavin Monagle of Masconomet High School here in a few minutes. They had an amazing comeback, a tremendous game against Beverly, a one-point win. I think they scored in the last 45 seconds or so, or something like that. So we'll talk with Coach Monagle about that. And around here, you know, it's St. Mary's now is unbeaten. The Northeast Conference has a couple of unbeaten teams, actually three. Marblehead, Masconomet, and Swampscott are all unbeaten in the Northeastern Conference overall. Just had one game so far in the actual league play. And in the Cape Ann League, only North Reading is sitting at 4-0 at the moment. And I hope to be talking with North Reading's coach here coming up during the week as well. Should be able to. Ed Blum, we talked with him, I think it was last week or the week before. And North Reading just keeps on winning as well. So a lot going on in football. Lots of other sports, too, that I can't even keep up with. And we'll try to pick up on that if we can as the fall season hits the midway point here very soon. Amesbury playing very well, beating Triton the other night. Swampscott continuing to be unbeaten. And how about, yeah, you want to let him out. Oh, you did. Okay. Swampscott, I'm sorry, Salem. Salem, three in a row now, and Salem beating Gloucester for the first time in 22 years. So a big story in that one as well. Let's see now. What else do we have? All right, we'll talk with Gary. We'll talk with Mike. Hopefully we'll talk with Coach Gavin Monagle. And I'm not sure where I'm going to be this week. Some of the places where we can't broadcast from for various reasons, and where masks are required in the press box, I can't do that. I can wear a mask, but I can't broadcast because of the glasses I wear primarily. And so I won't be able to do that because I can't see over the mask when I'm writing, looking out, and so on. They're like trifocals, I think they're called. Kearns has shown up, and he's on his phone here, so I'll give him the mic, and he can join us when he gets ready. Before we even call Coach Gavin Monagle, I think yesterday's game, the Patriots game, was the most disappointing game of the season. I thought it was worse. It was such a worse loss than New Orleans, because in New Orleans, they just played horrible. And in my humble opinion, what is that? I-M-H-O? I'm going to turn that off while you're doing that. Tampa didn't look that good. I have to give the Patriots credit on defense for, I think, keeping Brady under wraps. But Tampa doesn't look that impressive. So, very disappointing loss for me. Coach?
Hi, Rick.
Hey.
Are you looking for input?
Well, that's why you're here.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. They should have won. Once again, I mean, they literally should be 4-0. Because every game they have lost, they have beaten themselves with mistakes, poor fundamentals, lack of effective tackling, and wrapping people up and holding them once they have made a stop. Offensive line continues to absolutely play pathetically. There's no protection for the kid. I mean, I would sue them for non-support if I was him.
He did look good, I think.
I'll tell you, despite... I mean, he stands there. Give the kid credit. He's got cojones. He stands
he
in there in the face of that pass rush,
yep,
and delivers the ball,
yep,
99% of the time on target. You know, receivers haven't been able to... Tight ends they signed have stunk.
Mm-hmm.
Last night was the first night they actually caught something besides a cold. And... They haven't played well. The overall, the receivers haven't played well. The number of passes that have been dropped. The offensive line didn't create any kind of running room last night. None whatsoever. And that was supposed to be the strength of the team. Heron is a rotating door at right tackle. Owedu is awful. I cringed when I was watching the Kansas City game earlier in the day because the announcer called out and complimented how well Joe Tooney was playing. And where does he play? He played left guard. And he just, you know, he was quiet. You don't hear about it, but I just watched him execute in the running game. And he would fire off, and he would just blast people. And he's not the biggest guy, but he is just so damn good. I'm thinking, why didn't we sign him? Why don't we give him an extra nickel and keep him, you know, around? Owedu played well last year. Well, he stinks this year. You know, Wynn, same thing. Everybody was, they were running right by the offensive line.
Do we miss Dante?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's funny, I haven't heard anybody say anything about him. But year in and year out, I think you mentioned it last week, but year in and year out, they were moving parts. I mean, you could just take one part out, put another one in,
yep,
and that line would perform.
And these guys, they are not doing it.
I was just very...
The offensive game plan was a whole lot better last night. They were creative, you know. They moved around. They ran some shorter stuff. He went deep. It's just that they just kept making critical mistakes.
And the other thing is,
Taylor,
considering all that...
Gets a catch, gets hit, fumble, turnover. They were driving. You know, it's like the absolute wrong time for every mistake they made, and they made it right then.
Now, I got a question about Brady. He didn't look good last night. And I can't think that the Patriots defense is that good. He did not look good last night.
No, you know, and I was wondering, I said something
and
to somebody.
They kept blaming the rain. The announcers kept saying the rain. Hello, have you seen Tom Brady in the rain before? Jeez.
Have you seen him in the snow?
Yeah, really.
He's not bad there either.
Come on, the rain. I didn't think he looked good. I can't give the Patriots defense that much credit because I don't think Tampa's that good to begin with, but I don't know.
They do have their weaknesses, especially in their secondary, and this kid exploited that. I mean, you know, he was throwing the ball all over the place. And, well, I was wondering, and I had said something earlier today, what if Tampa Bay wins and Brady doesn't play well? How are they going to – is Brady the great architect of the defeat?
Mm.
Or how are they going to explain it? So now we know. It was the weather. He didn't play well because it was raining. I don't know. Matt Ford had a pretty good passing day. He had more passing yards than Tom Brady. Okay? And he had a, completion to attempts was better than Brady.
Jones was 31 out of 40, I think.
You know, he was,
and they weren't all dump-offs either.
Oh, no.
He did, the kid looked good. There's hope. I mean, there's hope there for him. But it's not Patriot football that you know, Tim, we're used to seeing Patriot football for the last 20 years as a team. And the Brady ascension has been part of that, of course, because he's been, it's funny they say he didn't, you know, didn't have a supporting cast. I disagree. You just mentioned guys like Tooney. All these guys who have been a supportive cast year in and year out, the coaches, you know, Dante Scarnecchia and those guys. There's been a supporting cast both on offense and defense. And I haven't seen it yet, four games down now. Haven't seen team play. Haven't seen good all around special teams. Where'd they go?
I don't know.
Matt Slater, are you kidding me? What was that?
You know, I said it, and it was, and I always listen to the radio. I always listen to Zoe. And 5 seconds before he said it, I said to my wife, I said, Slater knows better. You can't do that. He knows better. And then Zoe comes on and goes, he knows better than to do it. He ran 40 yards out of bounds and then came back in and made the hit. Even if he just sort of like stopped and waited, let the other guy hit him first, then he could have jumped on and there's no penalty. But he dove and hit him first.
If he had come back in, he wasn't going to make any play. There's no doubt about that. But so what?
But
so
he
what?
Did. He was
No, but that's what I'm saying. He did because he stayed out of bounds so long. Yeah. If he had come back in bounds, they were with him step for step. He couldn't get back in and make a play. So, you know, he's running to avoid the hit, and it's like, no, which is worse, Math? Come on. You make this play. Oh, anyway.
Yeah, but that tells you all you need to know about how well overall they're playing as a team. That he makes that kind of, Slater makes that kind of blatant error.
Yeah.
And you can't call that rookie mistake.
And then on top of that, Folk, who's been the best kicker in the solar system, he hits the upright.
Well, and, I don't blame him.
No, I'm not blaming him. No, that's 56 yards.
You asked him to hit out of his range.
That's right.
And he almost
he did.
Won it for
he had the, he had the length. And it's just if Jones had just gotten him 10 more yards.
What do we say? If Jones had gotten him 10 more, yeah. How about if a running back sprung something?
Whatever.
You know?
Whatever. Everybody says, you know, Brady gets them in the field position.
How about if Taylor doesn't fumble and they go in and they score on that short field that they had?
That's what I'm saying. This one hurt worse. This was the worst. I think this one was awful.
Because they played so much better than they played. Mm. They played well.
Mm.
But well being a relative term, Rick, in terms of what we have come to expect in the past.
But again,
not of last year's team, but of the teams in the past.
Not impressed.
Teams in the past win that game.
Not impressed with Tampa. All right, we'll be back with Coach Kevin Monagle here in just a second. This is MSO News Sports. Stay with us.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Okay, we're back now with Maskenomen football coach Gavin Monagle. Coach, welcome back. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Oh, good. Do you have your voice back yet?
No, not really. It's kind of gone a little bit, but it's part of the fall, you know.
Coach, you got to tell me about this one. I mean, you guys are 4-0 now, and I was at the Marbleheaded Peabody game, and the public address announcer kept us up with scores, you know, running scores, out-of-town scores, as he called them. And your score, back and forth we go, and it was like, holy rollies. Then we talked with we got the Salem News podcast coming up tomorrow with the Salem News sports writers, and Phil Stacey was saying how this thing came down to a last second thing. Coach, you got to give me a recap on this one. What was the whole thing like, and what were some of the key points?
Like a tennis match, you know, back and forth and back and forth. You've seen it. Kids go up and down the field. I mean, both offenses were, you know, good offenses. I mean, we knew going into it, it was going to be, you know, challenging to slow them down a little bit. You know, they've been putting up some pretty good points there. snap up the middle. By the way, both offenses are very similar, too, like the same kind of double wing, wing T style of offense. And he busted one. They came back, went down the field. They put one up. They stopped us. And they busted a trap very similar to the one we did. And, you know, Kate busted it for like 60-plus yards. And just before half, they put one up. So I think we're down by a few at halftime. But, you know, it's one of those games where you say, we got to stop them. If we can stop them once, we know we can score. And I think they probably felt the same thing. And then I think the second half, we did stop them. They put only one up in the first and the second half. But then it came to, like, you know, right down the end, like, you know, in the fourth period, a fourth and short, and they stopped us by, like, an inch, you know, on probably a little 45. And then they drove down to, like, our 22. And we stopped them on a fourth down and short, and then we got that final drive capped off with Sam Nadler and his nice little run into the end zone. And so it was pretty exciting. I had like 40 seconds to go, and then we just hung on for the next 40 seconds because nobody knew what would happen.
Right. I know the boys.
Gave 2 minutes, it could have been trouble.
What the last drive? How did? What were the plays? I mean, how after a complete game like that, you're at the end of it, and you've played 47 minutes or so. Do you kind of know, you know, what can work and what you might not want to call?
Yeah, we do have ideas what can work. A lot of them were running plays. That was a little problem, though, because we're running out of time. And we needed chunks, and we were able to get a few chunks. And then we needed a couple pass plays. And we were able to hit Owen Barrett a couple times to keep the drive going on some quick little passes just to kind of keep it going a little bit, get to the outside a little bit. And then came back to some more running plays. So we did sprinkle our run game in there with a few pass plays, and we were able to get the chunks that we needed. Sammy broke, I think it was like a 7 or 8 yard run maybe to get to the end zone, and that was huge. We didn't have any timeouts left either, so we're kind of just, you know, we didn't have any plays left. If that didn't get in, you know, maybe two more plays left, you know, depending on.
Were you able to enjoy the? It's probably a stupid question, but were you able to enjoy the moment? Because every place I've been to so far this year, Gavin, it's been packed. I mean, the people they're ringing. It looks like Thanksgiving Day games.
It's great. No, it's same here. It's been great. Started at Newburyport. I was stunned. Like it was pretty cool. You know, something happened in the crowd. We'd score this, and I couldn't believe the crowd that was up there for us. And then they scored, and it's like, the crowd was great there, it was great at Peabody, it was great at Winchester, and we had a great crowd ourselves. Beverly brought a ton of kids over themselves, so it was a great atmosphere for high school football.
Coach, this is Tim.
Hey, Tim.
How much of an advantage is it, as you mentioned, you basically run the exact same offense. Can you over-prepare or, in a way, under-prepare to play defense against it?
Well, you know, it comes down to execution. You know, we can practice it, and we, you know, I'm sure they knew what we were doing, and I think we just executed pretty good. Both teams executed. I think their offense is really good. So, you know, we had some ideas preparing for it. We went to plans B and C to try to slow them down the second half. I think, like I said, the second half we were able to keep them out of the end zone a little bit more. They threw the ball a couple of times, got in, which, you know, made some big completions to keep it going. And they definitely did some things to stop us at times. So we had to go to plans B and C a couple of times on offense. So I think we did that both have to counter each other a few times. I think we both knew what each other was trying to do. Like I said, if we went 2 or 3 more minutes, who knows what would have happened.
You know, one of the things that I talk to Jeff every week, and he was looking for some consistency because, you know, they scored big, then they didn't score, then they scored big, and he wasn't sure whether Jekyll or Hyde was going to show up on Friday night. And once they get the hang of this wing T, he's got enough skill players there to be very consistent in the number of points that they're going to put on the board, and it's just a matter of their defense finding a way to be consistent and keep the other guys out of the end zone.
Yeah, I could see that. I think they're getting to be very consistent. I saw that, you know, the North Andover game they had was the one where they didn't put up many points, but you know what, it happens once in a while. You know, they had a couple turnovers in there. I think they lost like at least two series. You know, two possessions on a, one was on a kick return. They fumbled it. Oh, it was like an onside, but they didn't recover it. And then they did fumble away something else. So they did lose a couple series out of the get-go, and North Andover really worked the clock pretty good too. So it happens sometimes. It happens sometimes, but you can see that they, you know, there are other games that they've got it going pretty good.
Coach, the Nadworthy boys got some ink in the papers, you know, and the skill players always do. I don't know why they call them skill players. Your guys up front, tell me about some guys who did it up front for you.
We got a great group up front. You know, with Danny Ganji is one of our, he's our center. He's the kid who's been there the longest. He started last year as a junior. Will Magnifico's one of our guards there, with Jeff Papalato, and we got Canada Hunt as one of our tackles, and Albie LaVita is the other tackle. So between those guys there, they do a super job overall. Like I said, only one of them had experience from last year. We had to convert a couple kids here and there. Eric Seabach and Tyler McMahon played tight end. They do a super job as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we got pretty good speed. Last year we had some big guys. This year I think it's more speed on the line, and I think it goes well with this offense. And like I mentioned, Owen Barrett before as, mm-hmm. you know, a super kid who's kind of been a go-to guy, you know, catching the ball. So, you know, we've got some pretty good skill guys, which, I mean, that helps score points. You really can't score points if you don't have
the North,
good line.
The North Division, man, it's loaded. And you have played the Iron already, and now you got Marblehead coming in.
No, that's crazy. I know, as happy as you can be on Friday night, you know, the reality sets in on Saturday. You're playing, you know, one of the top programs in the state, you know, year after year, too. I mean, they're tremendous. And, you know, so reality did set in. You know, we definitely enjoyed it. But reality is we're playing these guys, and they, you know, Washington State, they really – they're a special team. They do everything well. You know, their line's super. They got skill guys. Defensively, you know, they got a great scheme. They run to the ball. They really very disciplined program. But, you know, fun to watch. They're not playing. Yeah, really fun to watch. You know, it's good solid football all the way through. They hit. They're physical. They're finesse. I mean, they are a fun team to watch. So, you know, we have our hands full. We saw them a couple times last year firsthand, and you know, they've always been as good as advertised. So, you know, we're just going to give it our best and, you know, just try to get better than we did last year.
You don't need any locker room quotes from the newspapers posted up there, do you?
No. The kids are excited.
Yeah.
About it. I mean, nobody, you know, wants to, you know, lose, that's for sure. And, you know, they beat us a couple times, and, you know, they're good. They're really, really good. It takes more than just wanting to, though. You know, they have a lot of skill. I know how, you know, they work hard, and they're a strong program. The best winning streak right now, I think, going in the state. I don't know what show that number's at, but I believe that's them right now. So they're also in our division too, in Division Three.
Right.
So it's,
Well, yeah, there is that, and somewhere along the line, I'm not ready for it yet, but I gotta ask coaches about this system, this playoff system, because I don't understand it. But I'm gonna wait a few more weeks before I get into that.
We'll play out a little bit, see what happens.
Okay.
But it's interesting.
That's great. Well, go ahead, Tim.
Coach, I gotta ask. It's a little far afield. Endicott football.
Yeah.
Has been so consistent over, I don't know, close to the last decade. Not a big school. You know, all of us of a certain age remember when it was an all-girls school.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
That age, yeah.
Yep.
But they have certainly come on and created such an athletic atmosphere over there. And the football team, year after year, is just so competitive. And they really fly under the radar of North Shore Sports.
Yeah, they do. Paul McGonigal's the coach over there. He's a great guy, super guy. And I think he just attracts players, his personality. He's smart. He's just really a likable coach and an excellent coach. He knows his football inside out. Had the good fortune to work with him over the years at camps, and he's done some local camps here for us at in the Tri-Town. Super, super guy. So I think he deserves a lot of credit with the football. But they definitely, even before he got there, they did start building it up, and they did a nice job building there. You know, all the facilities are really top-notch. You know, Paul has a 7-on-7 there in the summertime. He invites a lot of North Shore schools to go there. We went there the past couple of years. Been great. He really does a super job there.
And they're able to.
Football there.
And they're.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
I got my wife and I. We got married there on the in the chapel. Oh. And
I thought you were going to say on the football field. Okay.
I would have done the baseball diamond on the pitch.
Oh, okay.
By myself,
but, yeah. Okay.
But the previous coach, and I'm sure it's the same way now. They attract a lot of kids from out of state to come there.
Yeah. We've had. Some trainers, they have a good training program over there. They're all from out of state who end up with us for a year or two, you know. And I know on the North Shore they have a lot of kids from Endicott who do that as well. Yeah, it really is a hidden gem sort of right here on the North Shore. It's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. It is.
Just go there. It's gorgeous, you know. So I think other people from our part, we might take the North Shore for granted, too. That could be it. But other people who come to the North Shore and see, like, a campus like Endicott, like, can't believe it, right? I mean, how many colleges have a campus like this, right at the ocean, you know?
Yeah, and they keep adding to it. It's like, where does their land end? You know?
It's in the Atlantic Ocean.
All
right, Coach, it's great. You got a big one this week, and this is what it's all about. And keep the crowds coming in, man. This is good stuff.
No, it's great seeing the crowd. I agree with you there. It's super just seeing the kids coming, and they've been great. So, hey, appreciate all your support, though, guys.
Thank
you.
It's fun. It's fun, Coach. We'll talk to you later. Good luck this week.
Thanks, Coach.
All right,
thanks for taking
the
time.
Bye, guys.
Very good. Gavin Monagle, the Masquinaman High School football coach, and they are 4-0, and they're going to be hosting Marblehead on Friday night, and they are 4-0. And I might go up and cover that one. I can't broadcast from there, but I might just go up and cover it, see if we can get some post-game stuff and some audio and some pictures and stuff like that. Let's take a break. It is a Monday evening. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, working remotely tonight, as he usually does, Bill Proposky. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender. The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, executive sports editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
Okay, it's time now to talk golf and other stuff with a sports writer in general, and sports historian Gary Larrabee. Gary, welcome.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Tim.
Tim.
Evening.
He's here. We're here. And golf is still in the air, I guess.
Very much so. high school golf is in the major throes of their season. There was a big showdown match today in the high school level here in the North Shore in Cape Ann, where 13-0 Gloucester was taking on 9-0 Beverly. I don't know how that result came out, but anybody listening who wants to let us know, let us know.
There you go. Tim's immediately going to Twitter. He's got his finger on the phone right now.
Go for it. Anyways, talking very briefly about the pro before we get to some local stuff, other local stuff. Let's hear it for 25-year-old Sam Burns. He won the PGA Tour event this weekend down in Jackson, Mississippi, winning the Sanderson Farms Championship and $1.2 million. Not bad for an off-season event. And I believe it's Sam's first victory, but he's been up on the leaderboard a lot. So no surprise there, Tim. He's from Shreveport. He's a good old Southern boy who won in his basically his backyard.
Louisiana?
Awesome. No, it's Louisiana.
Go ahead, Tim.
Rick and I are fighting over the pronunciation of Louisiana.
Well, yeah, like New Orleans. You know,
that's right, yeah. It's New Orleans, Louisiana. There you go.
Anyways, good going for Sam Burns. No relation to George Burns, the former... Very good player from a previous generation. We should also tip our hat to Danny Willett, the second Englishman to win the Masters back in 2000, I think it was 2016. He celebrated his 34th birthday yesterday by winning the Dunhill Links Championship at St. Andrews. How sweet a birthday was that for Danny Willett. People forget about him, Tim. He hasn't won anything in America since that 2015 Masters, 2016 Masters, where, in fact, I won a lot of money betting on him on the weekend, believe it or not.
let's skip right over that.
Good for him. He's won eight times on the European Tour, one time on the U.S. Tour, but he's still very much a factor out there in pro golf. He's been in contention several times over here in the last couple of months. He's from Yorkshire, wherever that is in England, Tim. Maybe you know what that is. I do not. I know it's not near Liverpool.
It wouldn't dare be near Liverpool, would they?
No. Anyways, beyond that, guys, a couple of local things I want to mention. Number one, Nick Macario, formerly from St. John's Prep, the Massachusetts golfer of the year in 2020. He had a great run last week at the USGA Mid-Amateur Championship down in Nantucket. He got all the way to the semifinals before losing that match 2-1. Great showing for Nick McCary. He plays at a Bradford up in the Merrimack Valley, but we still consider him very much a part of the North Shore golf scene since he's playing so well. When he starts playing lousy, we'll never talk about him again. and we should also mention that Turner Hills, Kyle Vincey didn't make the cut for match play. He finished at 147. It took 142 to make it to the 64-man match play field, and Macario survived a 13-for-7 playoff to get into match play, and he had a hell of a run after that. But I'd really like to talk about, lastly, what's been going on over at Salem Country Club since early September. They're conducting a $3.5 million course restoration, as they call it. As you may have seen in my one of my last columns in the Salem News, that may very well lead to a USGA championship, another USGA championship, their seventh, but their first since the 2017 U.S. Senior Open. So let's see how that goes, but Tim, it's been a very exciting time at Salem. They've given up a part of this golf course to do all of their 57 bunkers over, but it's really a countdown, in my estimation, a countdown to when the USGA and Salem make an announcement. I think sometime next year they're going to be coming back, most likely for a third U.S. Senior Open, probably around 2030.
It is, you know, and you've mentioned this. You've had this inkling of this going on now for several weeks, and there's no news drifting out of the country club itself.
Well, no, they have to keep it pretty much tight-lipped. But of course, they can't do anything till they reach some common ground with the USGA. Then, if they do, they have to come back to the membership for approval. The membership has to vote on this event, like they will do on all of the USGA events that come to the club. But it looks very much like there's going to be something happening. Typically, you know, they've been spending a lot of money even since 2017. They've spent a couple $1 million doing major work on restoring all of their greens to the original shape and size from when Ross opened the golf course back in 1926. Did all new drainage. They've spent a lot of money since the 2017 Senior Open, and I gotta believe it's going to all lead to one big news event coming up. Because face it, guys, the Country Club has next year's U.S. Open, which is the best, the granddaddy of them all here in America. But there's nothing else of the only other venue really that can have a major championship around here is Salem. They have lesser USGA championships like we just saw it. On Nantucket at Sankaty Head and Miyakamet. And next year they have the USGA Seniors at Catansett. But they're really the two big boys around here for hosting USGA championships at Salem and the Country Club. And maybe they may even make the announcement next year at the Country Club, since all the USGA hotshots will be around. And they may very well take a tour of Salem before they make such an announcement.
While the renovation is going on, Gary, how does that affect play? How does that affect the membership who want to play there?
I'm glad you asked me. They've actually worked on three holes at a time, and the bunker work is number one. Some tee work, either to reshape or move slightly in certain directions, some of their tees, or expand some of their tees. But three holes at a time, so the members can play 15 holes.
Okay.
At a time, which isn't bad when you're playing a phenomenal course like Salem. But the membership knows it could all lead to a very good windfall, because nowadays when you have a USGA championship, the USGA guarantees the club will not lose any money, and that often can lead to a very good profit. So it could all work out very well once again for Salem Country Club down the road.
Sounds good. Sounds exciting. And I'm curious about the logistics of that. I know Paul Ingram, when he was president of Bass Rocks, was saying how much involvement there is in maintaining the course and so on, just on a daily basis. So I can't imagine the man hours and so on that are being put into this. It must be incredible.
You know, it's a property. It's got a home. It has a beautiful building. There are other buildings, maintenance building, a cart building. There's so much involved in just maintaining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the budget every year is in the millions over there. And whether they're paying staff or keeping the golf course in the best possible condition and doing the same with their beautiful, you know, the original clubhouse is still standing from 1925. They built the clubhouse to open with the new golf course in 26. And they've done they spent several $1 million on the clubhouse as well over the years, especially recently. It's all part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
And you want USGA to come back to your course, you got to keep working at it and keep making it better and better.
All right, before we let you go, Gary, how are you handicapping the Red Sox-Yankees? I was going to say series, but game.
Well, of course, the Yankees have owned the Red Sox the last, seven or eight times they've played, but the Red Sox owned them before.
Mm.
And, of course, the last time Eovaldi pitched against him, he got hammered big time. But... And nothing can surprise us after what we've seen. This amazing topsy-turvy year for most of the teams in Major League Baseball, particularly the Yankees and the Red Sox. So I give it a toss-up. I'd love to see the Red Sox pull it off. It's been a hell of a year for them when you think about how we were talking about them, Rick, back in April.
Oh, yeah.
Lucky to be 500, and
That's
here
right.
they are. What, they finished 22 games over 500.
Oh, so, I remember. When they opened up 0-3 against Baltimore, I said, the season's over. So you're right.
Fooled us all.
It's been fun.
Gary, yeah. I haven't been able to find anything about Gloucester Beverly, but there was a JV golf match that was canceled because of the weather, so that might have been the way of the world on the North Shore golf scene for high school kids.
We'll talk about some more next week.
Excellent. Gary, thank you so much. Be well. Oh, listen, next Monday we're off because of the holiday, but we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks, man.
Thank you, Gary.
See
be
you,
well.
Gary.
Thank you.
Gary Larrabee, golf historian, no, golf writer, sports historian, sports writer. All right, we'll take a break, see if we can get a hold of Mike Grenier. This is North Shore Sports Night, and you are with us. Let me see here. What was I going to – oh, don't forget, we'll have the North Shore Sports Writers podcast, the Salem News Sports Writers podcast. That'll be posted around 8 o'clock tomorrow morning right here on MSO with Phil Stacey, the sports editor, the assistant sports editor, Matt Williams, and sports writer, the sports editor from the Gloucester Times, participating this week, Nick Kukuru. Nick Giannino wasn't available for this particular podcast, but we'll post that in the morning, as I said, around 8 o'clock. And if you have anything you want to mention, suggest, or complain about, send it to msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. Not sure what we're doing for our broadcast game this week. As I said, I may be going to Masconama to cover that game. We cannot broadcast from there. We can't broadcast from Marblehead right now due to actually logistics. We're not able to broadcast from Danvers due to COVID. They require the mask. Nothing against Danvers. They do a wonderful, wonderful job over there. We're so happy to be included in sporting events over there, but I'm just not able to do it. I can't broadcast with the mask. It's just, again, physically impossible for me. So when things get better, we'll resume our live broadcast from Danvers. Other schools we can't broadcast from, and others we can. So we'll see. We'll see what develops, and just, again, check out the website this week, and I'll let you know what we're doing when I figure out what we're doing. All right, this is MSO News Sports. We'll take a break, and then hopefully Mike Grenier will be with us here pretty soon. And that's that. We'll be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, executive sports writer at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we're back now with Mike Grenier and Tim and Mike chatting here. And the thing is, Mike, when Tim is here, things run a lot more smoothly, and I hate to admit that, of course. But
of course you do. But, you know, Rick, it's fine. I know you just talked to Gary, and earlier I heard you talk with Gavin Monagle of Masconoma, and you mentioned you didn't want to talk about the MIA football playoff system. I had to chuckle because I feel the same way as you do. It's... you know, I guess I don't want to say I'm an old timer, but I'm a purist. I like the days of conferences when you had like 8 or 10 teams and, you know, you finished first and you went on to the postseason and you had your Thanksgiving Day game. Now it's so different. You play 3 or 4 games and you go into this playoff format where, you know, you play someone from Division 36B and if you advance, you know, you play the next team from 27A. It's just so convoluted. I can't figure it out and I think I'm reasonably bright, you know.
I kind of liked the original way where you got 7 points for a win, and if you played up a division, you got an extra point, and if you played down, you got less points.
Sure, sure. You know? Something that at least is understandable.
Exactly.
These days, it seems chaotic.
And it didn't require, well, let's create 38 divisions so everybody get a chance to play.
That's right. And I think that's the problem.
That's one of society's problems right now, is that no one can accept you lost.
Right.
You didn't play well enough. You need to get better. I told Rick the story a long time ago. My freshman year at Tom Savio, I went up for the basketball team, and I was the last kid cut. And I came home, and my father asked, so how'd you do? And I told him I got cut. And he goes, well, if you want to play, get better.
Yep.
Only thing he said, well, I'm going to call the school. I'm going to talk to the coach. I'm going to talk to the principal. There was none of that. He told me, get better.
Right. And that's the way we handle things.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And if you wanted to play, you went out and got better.
Yeah. Okay, Rick, I'm sorry. I went off on a tangent right away, but whatever you want to do here.
Let's welcome you here first. Mike Grenier has joined us, sports writer. And Mike, I think, and then I'll let you guys, wherever you want to go with it, but impressions from Celtics first couple of days training camp?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think they're playing, even as we speak here, their first preseason game at home, where everybody has to show proof of vaccination to get in the building. I think it'll be interesting. I mean, they have a huge roster right now, obviously, which they have to cut. So they'll look at all these guys and all these next three or four preseason games. And I know it starts, the real thing starts on October 20th against the New York Knicks with coach by Tom Thibodeau, the former Salem State player and coach and all that stuff. So, you know, it's hard to tell right now how good they're going to be, but, you know, they got a whole bunch of new players, and they've got a couple of old standby, I don't want to call them old standby, young veterans in Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, who will expect to do the bulk of the heavy duty scoring. And old friend Al Horford is back, but who knows how much he has left in the tank. So, you know, I just don't, it's a hard team to gauge. They have a new coach. You know, Brad Stevens is now the general manager. It really is hard. You know, they had a disappointing season last year, finished 500 during the regular season and lost in five games in the playoffs. So can they, you know, it's like you said, Tim, you know, you have to get better. Well, the Celtics, that's the place they're at right now. They have to get better if they want to have any kind of playoff run. They have to certainly play better than they did a year ago.
You know, does Al Horford make you demonstrably better?
Yeah.
Does Enes Kanter make you demonstrably better?
No, he does not.
You know, and those were, you know, according to the South, those were two key guys for them. And it's like, one, they're older. Two, they're not very mobile. You know, three, at this point in their careers, they're offensively challenged. They're a defensive liability. So where is the value in those two guys?
Well, I agree completely. However, the guy who fell into their laps, who could help, and I want to see what you think about that, is Dennis Schroeder, the guard, who turned down a Lakers offer of like 4 years and $72 million or whatever it was, and nobody else signed him. He signed with the Celtics for $5.9 million for 1 year. He's a very good guard. Him, I think. He's not like a number one guard that's going to give you 25 points a game, but he doesn't need to do that because you got Tatum and Jaylen Brown who can do that. But Schroeder can give you anywhere from 15 to 22, 23 points on any given night. He's that kind of, he's an offensive weapon, and he'll want to prove himself this year because he might be on a rental type contract with the Celtics. By that I mean, he could be walking free a year from now and looking for a much bigger contract. So he wants to prove himself. I think he's hungry. I think he will help the overall picture at the guard position.
You know, do you see him slotting in as the one or the two?
You know, I think I've seen him play both positions in his early years here in the NBA. I think he can play the one if he needs to. I'm thinking Marcus Smart might have to be the one, you know, at this point. So I don't think there's a designated guy right now. You know how they like to say these days, they call it the positionless basketball. In other words, like, mm-hmm. They want guys to be versatile. I think that's the way the Celtics are looking at it, too. So Schroeder might end up being the one or the two. I think it's hard to tell. I think the preseason will determine that, and we'll see how it goes.
You know, one of the problems for the Celtics is that both Brown and Tatum like to handle the ball. They like to bring it up. They like to be the facilitator, and that may in and of itself be one of the problems that the Celts have had over the last couple of years.
Well, yeah, I agree, because I think Tatum is a guy who actually tried to improve his assist total last year, but he's still one of these guys, like so many of the star players on the NBA, right, Tim and Rick, he's a guy who likes to isolate and, you know, dribble the ball for 10, 12, 13 seconds until there's like 2 or 3 seconds left on a 24-second clock, and then he makes his move either towards the basket or launching a three-pointer. I mean, they're talented enough to do that. Jaylen Brown the same way. But they have to really coalesce. They have to sort of play together and avoid that isolation type offense that they've been accustomed to. They have to be more pass-oriented and get other guys involved, because Schroeder can score and Peyton Pritchard can come off the bench and score, and Horford will give you a few points. Cantor can give you a few points. But they got to share the ball, because this is not a team that's – they don't have – the Celtics do not have the requisite number of superstars to be a complete contender in the conference that they're in. So they have to share the ball, even though they have two very good, outstanding, all-star caliber players in Brown and Tatum. They don't have that third star, that third superstar, to put them up there with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Nets and teams of that nature.
Let's take them back to the Boston Celtics of 1982-1987.
Yeah.
And make them watch every single game when DJ and Danny ran the guard positions.
Right.
And you had Larry and Kevin playing the wings and Robert in the middle.
Right.
And watch how they distributed the ball. The guards brought it up. And even if Larry rushed and brought it up, he was making a pass to somebody and then going to an open spot, a la John Havlicek.
Right.
You know, they just created so many offensive opportunities by not having the ball in their hands. And these guys today think, oh, I need the ball in my hands to create the offensive opportunity.
Right. I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's the way basketball is these days. You know, we've mentioned Robert Williams, Tim, as a guy who's going to probably – he's counted on as being the center, but there's no true. There's not many traditional centers these days. The center is a guy these days who gets you the rebound, and even if he's under the basket, the thing that infuriates me when I watch the Martin game is a center like a Robert Williams, who's a very good athlete, will get a rebound, and instead of going for the putback and making a basket and maybe getting fouled at the same time, they'll kick it back out 22 feet to the 3-point shooters.
Well, when I was in high school, my coach told me, get the ball and give it to somebody who can shoot.
Right.
So I would do that very thing.
But, you know, it's just the way the game is designed these days, and the way the coaches expect players to play. It's the way the players expect to play. And how about this one, Tim? How about this one? The players have to get vaccinated in order to get paid. And I noticed that Wiggins, who was a number one, like maybe number two or three overall pick several years ago with the Minnesota Timberwolves, he was very adamant in saying he was not going to get vaccinated, and he had his reasons, and he was very, what's the word I want? He was very contentious when he talked to the media about it. All of a sudden, we find out today he got vaccinated because he will not get a paycheck.
Yeah.
I love it. I think that, you know, if more companies and industries did this,
yep,
you'd find a whole lot more people waking up to the reality that, oh, if I'm not vaccinated, I can't go to work, and I'm not going to get paid.
Right.
You know?
Well, and bringing it closer to home, the ex-Celtics that we love so much, Kyrie Irving, right, Rick? He has not said whether he's been vaccinated.
Well,
and of course, he still believes the Earth is flat. You know, we understand that's his long-held belief.
Mm-hmm.
But he makes an awful lot of money, so he'd be sacrificing a tremendous paycheck if he doesn't get vaccinated by the time the season starts. I'm not sure if they have to get vaccinated by the time these preseason games get going. I think that might even be the case.
Did you see where Shaq, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Barkley, I mean, they all unloaded on those guys. And I think it was Barkley who called Kyrie stupid.
Oh, yeah, and you know, you're going to get that. And I know that LeBron got vaccinated And he said, after I'm over my initial skepticism and I got vaccinated. What was the skepticism about? There are 700,000 dead Americans from COVID. So how could you be skeptical? I mean, you know, it's just crazy in my mind because these guys are role models for kids, okay? If Kyrie Irving doesn't get vaccinated and comes up with these conspiracy theories, you're going to have a certain number of high school kids all over the country who are going to believe that junk. And so I'm glad that the NBA is coming down hard on these guys, and money talks, right? Well, if these guys want that to believe that, they shouldn't get vaccinated, then they could just walk away from the game and not get their 28, 29, 30. Because we're not talking like the old days in the NBA where players made 15, 20, 25,000, and they needed to have second jobs like Tommy Heinsohn did and people like that, old Celtics players. They're talking guys that are making 25, 30, 35, 40, and even more millions of dollars per year. And if they're missing one paycheck, that's it. I mean, they're going to cave, you know, so therefore they have to get vaccinated. I mean, I'm glad that mandate is in place, and I hope that they follow through it. They follow through throughout the entire season.
Well, Mike, we've blasted through about 15, 20 minutes here. Any final thoughts that come to mind that you want to get off your chest?
Well, I mean, hey, you asked Gary Larrabee if the Red Sox are going to win tomorrow, so I should chip in. Oh, by the way, I should mention this. The Patriots last night, right, guy? I don't know if you've talked about this. Great game. Deserved to win, I thought. However, you know, and we saw the flaw, the offensive line. 8 carries for minus 1 yard.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to continue to be a problem all season. I was looking it up this afternoon. They have the second fewest yards, rushing yards, of any team in the NFL. And the only team that's worse is the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are also having a bad year at this point.
Need to bring back Skarnecchia.
Yeah, well, they need better offensive linemen. Trent Brown missing his first 4 games has been a devastating loss for them. But they need more than that. They need more better athletes in the offensive line because you can't. I mean, Mac Jones is a rookie, and he had a great game last night, I thought, against a tough opponent.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal, and in a tremendously pressurized situation. Very impressive. But if you're a rookie quarterback and you're getting teammates that are getting 8 carries for minus 1, that puts an extra heavy burden on a quarterback. And I know that Belichick doesn't want that in the least, but so they have to get better. It's like, go back to the original thing. You got to get better. And they have to get better as an offensive line if they want to win some games this season, you know?
Yeah. I like to focus on Mac Jones' eyes. Did you see one of the stats that they had on the TV last night when they were doing a bio of him?
Yeah.
He graduated from Alabama.
I know.
4.0.
Yeah.
And you wonder why Belichick drafted this kid?
Yeah.
And it now lends credence to the rumor that he was teaching Cam the playbook. I turned to my wife and I told her that. She started to laugh.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, that's why he wanted him. He absorbs all the information. And I watch his eyes when he comes up to the line of scrimmage and he's in the huddle. And there's no fear. He's full of confidence.
Right.
Can you imagine what...
Maybe we should end on that note. Do we agree that this kid has a real future?
Oh, my God, yes. Can you imagine the look in Cam's eyes if he had to play that game last night? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. That wouldn't have been pretty.
No, it would not have been pretty.
I mean, hey, he brought him to the brink of that's a play that I keep going back to, Tim and Rick, is the third down play just before the attempted field goal from 56 yards, which obviously on a bad weather night was really a difficult kick. The third down play was a tip pass. He had a guy open in the middle. Would have been just enough to get him a first down and maybe get him 10 yards closer with less than a minute left in the game, and it would have been an easier field goal, Nick Folk. And they just kind of made it just a really difficult field goal, 56 yards, you know.
But, you know, those passes are coming. Brady, you know, Brady wasn't perfect for a long time, you know, and this kid, you know, you look at where Brady was in his first year, even though the record doesn't reflect it, this kid could be miles ahead of where Brady was when he first started.
I've looked at it. Yeah, his first 3 or 4 starts, he's far better along in terms statistically and what he's been able to do with the passing game. You know, obviously Brady had much better all-around teammates and a much better defense to work with.
Oh, yeah.
And so he had more time to develop, you know, quietly, I guess we could say. And he was a game manager. Whereas this kid sort of has to be the game winner because they don't have a running game. So let's not forget that. I think he acquitted himself really well yesterday, last night, in a horrible weather situation. I think he's only going to get better from here on out, and it's going to be great to watch, I think.
Oh, I think so, too.
Good stuff, Mike. We're going to be off next week, so we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay, thank you, guys. Appreciate it. You have a good week. We'll talk to you in a couple.
All right. Okay, take care, Mike.
Thanks.
Be well.
Yeah.
That's Mike Grenier, sports writer, knowledgeable about a whole lot of stuff. All right, Coach, that's going to do it. Any final things, thoughts, whatever?
Yeah, I just, you know, I loved it when they picked Mac Jones with the number 15. I couldn't believe he actually fell to him at that place. But I was like, you know, I mean, the kid just demonstrated so much maturity his senior year at Alabama. And it's just the pressure of being the quarterback at Alabama,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you are surrounded by great players. On the college level, when you're in Alabama, there's no collective team better than Alabama. And
let me have that little phone there, the handheld there. Let me see.
Call from spam name Anave.
Spam name Anave. Okay, well, we'll bury that one. Yeah, you're right.
And you know, so I mean, he came in, you know, on draft night. Yep. A quarterback. Mm. You know, you could see it, and he was that way all through training camp. You know, he said all the right things, but you know, he had his eye on one thing. I'm going to be the starter. You know, and his level of play forced the Patriots to go, yeah, he's our starter, and it's a decision that I don't think they've had a moment of regret. You know, he's
well. It looks very promising for sure,
God,
but they've got to play better. I mean,
that's a team. The team has to play better.
My goodness gracious!
As good as he's played for a rookie, I mean, he's the best rookie so far out there.
Well, I think he's one of he's probably better than that. probably one of the best quarterbacks right now.
That too, when he's sitting at 1-3, and he should be 4-0.
Yeah.
If the team had played better. Quality football. They'd be 4-0.
Well, we'll see. I mean, maybe they'll get a breather down in Houston because I read today that the quarterback who had to fill in for the starter had one of the worst quarterback ratings in history as Houston got wiped out. I think it was like 0.8. I don't know. Houston, you know, maybe that's what they need. But who knows? The way these team is playing, I don't have a lot of confidence. I don't have a lot of faith in that. I'm very disappointed in yesterday's game. Very, very disappointed.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that I was disappointed because they should have won the game.
That's what I'm talking about.
I know. They should have won the game.
To me.
With a few less mistakes, a few less stupid penalties, you know, a few more made tackles, you know, they win that game basically handily.
And if Brady plays... continues to play in the future like he did last night, I think there's going to be some hard times in Tampa. But you know, is whatever. I don't think a Patriots defense is that great. So I think two things. I think Brady just had an off night, and you know, he's had trouble sometimes with the spotlight.
His throws weren't on the money.
And secondly, but if it was a defensive scheme, and I have no idea about these things, but if it were. Then obviously, you know, it's a copycat league. Other teams are going to look at it and say, okay, what did the Patriots do that made him not have a great night?
But nobody adjusts better on the field than Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they said, you know, he didn't have a good game, you know, but in the end,
they won. That's it. That's
and
all that matters.
W is what you're looking for
that's
at the end of the end of 60
yep,
minutes.
Yep. That's it. All right. That's Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer. Don't forget to check out the Salem News Sports Writers Sportscast podcast tomorrow. Be posted right around 8 o'clock. Bill Newell will be back hosting it next week. And I think that's it. Once again, our email address is msonewsports@gmail.com. And this is msonewsports.com. Thank you for being with us. Bye-bye.